Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Planetary Powers. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm very proud to bring you episode 4, Tim Beckley's contribution to cosmic spirituality, part 1. And we have as guests tonight Maria D'Andrea, and also we have Mark and Phyllis Brinkelhoff. Maria is here, and I'm looking forward to speaking with her. Maria, I'm so glad you're here. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, both on and off the air. How are you?
Wonderful, and thank you so much for inviting me on your show again. I love doing your show. You're so knowledgeable, and you're just magic.
Well, thank you.
In a very positive way.
You've written over 65 books to prove it. You've written more books than most people I know.
Well, I always look at it as the more people know I have to do things for themselves, the better the world gets. In fact, Tim and I used to laugh about it because I write nothing negative, nothing. Used to confuse
right.
him in the beginning.
How did you meet him?
Okay. Well, actually, I met him about 85, and I met him at a psychic fair. I was doing readings, and he was promoting his books, you know, all different books, because as a publisher, it included his. It just wasn't focused on just his. You know, uh-huh. We became friends, and we're getting along, and he said to me, you really need to write a book, because I deal with so many different paranormal and psychic, you know, basically occult fields. And
yes,
I kept telling him, I don't know how to write. And he kept saying, no, really, just let it flow. So I wrote my first book with him and pretty much the rest of them. But the funny part was the first book I wrote, because, you know, like I said, I only do positive like you. So the whole book had all these different ways that people can improve their lives. But it was all positive. And I got a call from him and he says, listen, he says, you need to put something in that's also negative to balance it. And I kept saying to him for 2 months, we kept going, no, I'm not. Yes, you should. No, I'm not. After 2 months, when the book went out, after that, he went, never mind. You know, because you and I basically only work positive. And he was just such a phenomenal person. And the funny part is people don't realize, first of all, that he channeled. You know,
right.
We were talking about that earlier. And one of the books he channeled was called New World Order, Prophecies from Space. And I think Carol Ann Rodriguez, you know, had, you know, fixed up the book a little bit. She was very good at editing. And she did the artwork. A wonderful, wonderful lady. And,
yeah,
a lot of the things. Yeah, and a lot of the things that he wrote, if you really read them, you know, it always put in something on UFOs, different space beings. In fact, he wrote a book called Kahuna Power. And it's basically magic and mysticism with Hawaiian magic. And somewhere in the book, you know, he put in different entities and different contacts. So, you know, he always has that little part in there somewhere if you really look for it, because he was very tuned into different realms.
Right.
And the funny point with him was we used to have these in-depth talks, and what we always came up with at the end, no matter what we were talking about, was that it had to do either with energy, frequency, or vibration. It was always one or both or all of them. So we used to laugh because it's like, no matter what we talked about, this is what we come up with.
That's what the ancient Hermetics came up with too. So you reach the point of great wisdom and tapped into the source. That's what they used to say as well. And now Tim always presented himself partially as like kind of like a little bit above it, tongue slightly in cheek when he was talking about the paranormal. But it turns out that he had a deep faith in it, and that he his beliefs were very much spot on.
And I find when I used to talk to him that he really had personal experiences, some of which he spoke about, you know, to the public, and some of which he didn't. But he was very, very tuned into that type of energy, and he would just get information on and off. Sometimes, like most of the time, he'd get information, and he wouldn't really remember what was said, what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol, I think, wrote some of it down when he spoke. So it's really interesting how he just tuned in. He just tuned in like that. Not consciously. I think what happened was he was very spiritual. He had some experiences like that when he was younger, I think preteen. And I think that opened him up a little bit enough so that if something came in as information, he didn't shut down and go, oh, no, I can't do this. Or it's not real. That's like when we talk about children. Children are very open to magic and different energies. If you don't shut them down, they'll just continue and get better with it. But most of society explains to you how you can't see that. That's not real. You need to stop talking about it. You know, so we lose a lot of that with people. You know, in ancient times, you know, if you knew so many different things on the occult side or, you know, psychic, especially as a child, you know, pretty much they go, yay. Now they're going, don't say that. It's starting to come back. You know, you have a lot of people now that are more open to it.
Now with the internet, with the internet, people are having a lot more exposure to thoughts beyond the social programming, the social script. So, people are getting exposed to it. And a lot of material that used to be very hard to find is now like a finger click away. I remember there was a book called The Arbitel, which was a book on magic. And it was a book on the Olympic spirits, as they called them, or the Olympians, which I'm very attuned to. So I remember when I was younger, just starting out in my late teens, early 20s, I would go to Weiser's and a bunch of other bookstores.
Oh, I love that store.
Me too. The original one, though, not the place where they moved. And it would take like years and lots of money to find these books, you know. And now they're free on the internet. So I miss the days looking for them, though, because that was an adventure in itself.
Well, I'm very bad because I like the physical books because I like to write like little notes in them. You know, this works, this doesn't. If you tweak it, this will work. And
I
remember Tim and I Tim and I always used to talk about, you know, when we're talking to different people, and then we were talking about it to each other. We're always looking at it as if you change your mindset, then you can change your life. And I know you look at it the same way. It's just hard to change your mindset, even when you're aware sometimes. But he was very good at helping people do that, to see things differently from a different angle. And like you said, he had a really great sense of humor. You know, and sometimes you weren't sure if he was kidding, which made him laugh harder. And he would come out with these funny sayings out of the blue, and 2 seconds later, he doesn't know what he said. I was telling Carol, I talked to her, I said, we should have made notes. We could have had a whole book.
A whole book. I found a book that I had of his today, actually, where it was the Teenage UFO Adventures of Tim Beckley. I forget what the title was.
Oh, I love it.
But that was the subtitle. Mark and Phyllis just came in, and I wasn't aware that you guys didn't know each other, so I'm honored to introduce you both. Hi, Mark and Phyllis. How are you?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Got a little late. Sorry about that.
It's okay. On the other
line. Hi, how are you doing?
Good friend Maria Dondra. She's awesome.
Hi, Maria.
Hi, nice meeting you. I heard so
nice
much about the two of you. It's really nice to get to talk to you. Tim spoke about you all the time.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, I've known Tim.
In
I
a good way.
I know him from 1975 when I met him in New York at one of his UFO-type lectures he put together. Then we got to know each other better in 76. Then he'd come up skywatching up to Mayapack, New York with me and stay late. He'd drive home late. And we'd have UFOs fly around.
I know he had that
around.
In cult school, right?
Yeah, it was a Mahopac High School.
Did you know when he had
the
cult school?
It was a middle school at the time. And it was a high school, then a middle school, then back to being a high school again. I don't know. Too long ago. I went to kindergarten there. And But it's all backwoods behind the school. That's why mountain and woods. And you could go in the back fields and you'd see things.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
That makes a really big difference, too.
Now,
you know, when you're both tuned in.
Yeah, Phyllis is here.
We're here.
Yeah.
Finally.
Maria shared how she met Tim, and you just shared how you met Tim. Now, I'd like to know, like, what impact has Tim had on your lives and on the messages that you're here to share with people? I guess we'll start with Maria.
Okay.
I find that the fact that he was open to so many different things, you know, UFOs, magic, spirituality, and so many different things, you know, spiritual, psychic, paranormal, that it made it very easy to talk to him, and he would really try to teach you things if you were interested. If you had a question, he would always give you an answer. You know, a lot of times when people are very good in the field, they don't want to tell you because they want to know everything on their own so they look impressive. They don't really share, and he really did. He was just wonderful like that, and he helped so many people, which made me feel good around him. I know people where he was buying them food when they didn't have food. He would pay somebody's rent because they didn't have it. So people don't know that part about him so much.
No.
But he really tried to live by what he believed. And that's a very big difference. You do the same thing.
We all do.
Not too many people do. Exactly. But not too many people do. So when I first met him, that was very, very impressive because, you know, that thing about walk the talk and most people don't.
Right.
They may try. So when you meet somebody really genuine and from the heart, it's really impressive, especially way back when everybody was saying, this is a terrible field.
Mark and Phyllis, how about you?
What did you just say?
Mark
and Phyllis. Oh. Well, I met... I had an interesting meeting of Tim. Mark had already met Tim a few years earlier, and I was selling radio time at the time. I had had an incredible UFO experience a few months earlier, and I had become obsessed with UFOs. And I was sitting at my desk, and the newscaster finished a story, and he said, if you want more information on UFOs, call this number. And I almost dropped dead because I didn't even know we were doing this story on UFOs. So I copied the number down and I immediately called it. And since I was an outside salesperson, I could go out anytime I wanted to and say I was going on a call. So I called him up and I said, "Hi, what is this place? What do you know about UFOs?" And I got Harold Salkin on the phone, his PR guy for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I started asking him questions. Do you know this person? Do you know George Van Tassel? This one and that one.
Trevor James
Costley.
Yeah.
And they said, "Oh yeah, we know them all." I said, "Can I come down and speak with you?" So I did, and they said, "Oh, there's a contactee in town today, and he's supposed to come back." But I think they were actually lying to me.
They were.
Because
I never got there. I went straight to the meeting.
There was a contactee in town. It was Mark.
I talked to them. But
he was working. Tim had arranged for Mark to speak to the Spielberg people because they needed somebody with a positive experience as a child with extraterrestrials because they were doing research for E.T. the extraterrestrial. So Mark had, basically told him so many things. When we saw the movie,
stuff was in it.
I said, "Mark, I said, it sounds like you wrote the movie."
Yeah, didn't it? I had a golden retriever at the time, when I was 10 and 9, like that, 8, 9, 10, around there. And he would go out to the field with me and sit with the UFOs over me. So the dog in the movie was like a golden mix, it looked like. 12 years old is the age I was at when they were coming back and forth more and more, and friends could see them. They would come at a time I'd ask. If I said 8 o'clock, they'd be there. And so that's what E.T. and the extraterrestrial was like, 12-year-old Elliot.
Just like not to go too far on that, but the bottom line is, so I sat there all afternoon, and Mark finally had an angel tell him to go back, call Tim and Harold one more time to thank them, and he was getting ready to get onto a train, and he said, "Okay."
Yeah, he said, "They already know I'm leaving."
He said,
"No call."
He said, and they told him, "There's a woman that's been waiting for you all afternoon." And that was me.
Now I'm walking down the ramp at Grand Central, and a buffer zone occurs around me, like the angel push a buffer, so I can't walk past the buffer. I'm like, and people are walking by me like, "What the hell's wrong with you?" And I'm thinking, I'm whispering like, what? And they're saying to me, telepathic, he says, "Go back, call Tim, tell him thank you." I went, "Why?" I already called him and told him I'm going straight home. And all right, so I go back up, and Harold answers the phone. I had an art portfolio with me, photos and artwork. And he answers the phone. He says, "Oh, I'm so glad you called. there's been a woman waiting here for you for a couple hours. I said to him, because I had the vision of Phyllis in 1976 in Florida in a car.
Yeah, but it's okay. Don't
and
go, don't
I said,
go
does
there.
She have dark hair, glasses, and red lipstick and whatever? And he goes, yes. I said, that's the girl. But when I got to their place, I took a taxi over, actually. I couldn't go further. There were 30-something streets. So I took a quick taxi and got upstairs, and I was actually shaking in front of the door with hair going up my arms and, like, my head. I had long hair, so it was all standing up. Harold answered the door, and I said, I'm shaking. This is the person. This is my person I'm supposed to find. You know, this is the person to set up. And I said, I'm going to peek in. And at that moment that I peeked in, they had a long hall to their living room.
Uh-huh.
Phyllis at that moment looked over the coffee table, and I saw the whole profile of her, and it was her. So that's how I met Phyllis physically.
And that's how I met Tim. And Harold.
And Harold, yeah.
But, you know, the thing that was striking about Tim was that he was just so gentle. And he was a gentleman, and he was like you were saying, you know, knowledgeable and all of that. And I just really, and I know he was putting on UFO conferences back then, and he was really in the mix of paranormal UFO things that dissipated over the years, and nobody was doing UFO conferences anymore. I mean, in New York City.
Yeah, he was putting money.
But he was really, he was very active.
Yeah.
He was very active in putting on these types of events. And
yes, he was.
I just thought he was fabulous.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a guy that YouTube show, Mr. UFO's Secret Files.
Yes.
Yeah. So he always had something really interesting, out of the norm, a little bizarre, literally bizarre. And it's funny, no matter where I went with him, because sometimes we travel, and no matter where I went with him, something would come up that was synchronistic. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd get all excited. It was so cute, because he's this wonderful adult, and something synchronistic comes up, and it's like he was 12. You know, it was so cute. You know, but something always came up. And, you know, when we worked together, it was really funny, because we'd go somewhere, you know, ghost hunting, that type of thing, or we'd go somewhere, and he'd give me a title for the book, and I'd write the whole time, and he's by the beach, you know, he's hanging out, he's, you know, having a drink, he's listening to music, and once in a while, he would check on me and go, so how's it going?
Now, while we're on this particular point in the conversation, Phyllis and Mark are starting to put together books. They have three books that they've shared they're working on. Maria's published over 65, so
yeah.
She'd be a wealth of information on that process. So she's been sharing little bits and pieces. Do you have any advice to give them, Maria? Because you're very prolific.
Well, you know, actually, I have a question for you that might be helpful for me. When you're working with the different organizations, like I think I'm going to go through, I'm going to use Amazon. You know, Create Press or whatever they're calling it now.
Right.
Are there legal ramifications? I mean, I know I'm going to have to read the contract before I do anything, but
definitely.
I'm just wondering in terms of how they distribute, there's no exclusivities with them, right? If I wanted to pull the book from them at any point in time, I could do it.
No, you can do that.
There is exclusivity in the beginning, though. With Amazon, because I got two books, small short books, but still books, published on Amazon, and there's a period where it has to be exclusive to Amazon, but then after that period, you can put it in other formats on other sites.
Oh, really? So you need to give them an exclusivity in the short term?
Yes. Both for single books, I had to, you know, read their contract, and their contract said, I forget for how long they had it, but they had it exclusively for a short period of time, and then you could put it on other, like Barnes & Noble and other platforms.
The other thing is what I would suggest if you're putting books out are two things. One is make sure, even if you're dealing with a publisher, you need to make sure that you are the only one that has the copyright. And the
absolutely.
Reason is that,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Tim was very ethical, but I find what happens is say they're doing a run on 120 pages, as an example, and whatever you wrote is 2 pages short. If you don't have copyright, they can add whatever they want to make it that amount of pages. So you need to make sure you're the only one that has it. A lot of publishers won't work with you unless they have the rights. You can't do it because, honestly, the universe will take care of it getting out there and being known where it's supposed to be known. But if you do that and they add in, like I only write positive, they could add in 2 pages that are negative and then people are going to think it's me. And the other one was going to say,
you know, is that are you talking about book packagers?
I'm publishing.
Book people that package books like a Libris or something like that?
No, the people that, the publishers, if you're going to deal with a publisher, like Tim was a publisher.
I would only I can do my own layouts
exactly
and everything.
Exactly like that.
Okay.
Not the layout. Yeah, the people that actually, yeah, exactly like that.
Penguin.
You know, the
not
other
penguin.
Thing is that people, that people don't think about. Yeah.
What?
Okay.
What?
The other thing that people don't think about, and I didn't know a lot of this years ago, but if you, and you might know this, but if you put out anything as an ebook, I didn't realize the copyright needs to be on every single page. Where with the book, it needs to be in the front.
That's interesting.
Every single page. Otherwise, they can say, well, you know, this is all I saw on there. You know, every single page.
Oh, that makes
a little
perfect
on the bottom.
Sense. Maria, that makes perfect sense. I've never wanted to do an e-book because I just figure they'll steal all of Mark's artwork. And, you know, I just don't feel good about e-books.
Well, I'm not a computer person, so. Every time I touch something
sound like you are.
Well, no, you know, I know about it, but it's really funny. I touch electrical things, especially after I've done readings because I do very heavy readings. And, you know, it's like being psychically high because your brainwave is on alpha theta. And I'll touch something electrical, and they'll just blow up. So I should have owned stock, honestly, in the toaster company. I've blown up so many now. I actually taped a little sign, a little note. I scotch taped it to my toaster that went, don't touch.
Don't touch that. You know, Maria, I had a funny experience a long time ago. It's not about Tim, but it's weird. We had the old-fashioned computer from the 1990s. Big square thing, big one. And we had another computer, Phil's got, so they're right next to each other. And I was drawing on one of them, one of my unicorns or something. And then it all deleted, and I was like, no, all the hair I made. Anyway, so I'm sitting there drawing or whatever I'm doing, and the computer's on my left, the newer one, and a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And I'm peripherally looking at it because it's right there. And all of a sudden, I see the button pushed down to turn it on by itself, pushed it down, and I'm looking at it, and then the computer comes on, and I went, okay, and I'm waiting for someone to type. I said, do you want me to put a page? But I didn't, and my angels do things like that to me. But one time, we were leaving a page up for people, for the angels and everybody to type
just
on.
Oh, in case, right.
Yeah, you could leave a page up. Everything, just leave it on and put a page up and leave it overnight and see if anybody types on it overnight. Not a cat, you know, if you don't have a cat or your cat might type on it. But you just say, here it is. So we've had things that are strange like that, but I never saw that for a long time, the actual button pushing down and turning it on. I was like, what? Okay.
Yeah, I have a lot of activity in my house all the time.
Where do you live, Maria? Where do you live?
I'm on Long Island. I'm in
New York. Oh, okay.
You're
Long Island. Okay.
Yeah, we're near Central Park.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, near the Museum of Natural History, actually.
Oh, I love going there.
Now,
but
Maria,
they're always doing that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Have you ever had experiences? Have you ever had experiences with UFOs and with Ashtar Command?
Not with Ashtar Command. And Tim was very, very detailed, by the way, when he wrote the book and when he talked about them. He was very, very detailed about the information. And as far as I know, some of the information already hit, like, you know, in between when he wrote it and now. My experiences are really more, I go out of body. So I do a lot of astral projection, and I've run across UFOs and situations like that out of body, but not physical. So, as an example, I was out of body once, and I always laugh because people always tell me that when you're out of body and you're seeing the planet, that basically you're wishing past the planets and you're flying or whatever way they put it, right? I was a little disappointed. I was out of body and I was standing in one spot. You know, you could feel you're not moving, right? You're not moving and all the planets are moving by. And I kept seeing a couple of UFOs circling one of the planets. Part of me was like, well, what happened to what they told me about how it works? None of it worked like that.
No, yeah.
No, it's funny.
How you think? Yeah.
I've been doing astral projection. I've been in my field full time since I'm 16. Well, I was in it before, but I wasn't in it professionally before that. You know, and sometimes I do things, and 20 years later, I'll read something and I'll go, oh my God, it has a name. You know, and sometimes I call Tim and go, you didn't tell me it has a name. He goes, I thought you knew.
And what was the name of what, a planet or asteroids or what?
No, it was a planet, and I just kept seeing UFOs, you know, landing, you know, leaving, circling it. But I don't know what planet because I kind of That's not what I thought it was.
And you saw the Earth was not flat, right? Because I'm trying to tell people, not flat. And we've been around it. I've been around it physically. I mean, come on, guys. And I can tell people who are listening who might be flatters, Earthers, is that the government, the space people told me this a long time ago, that they were going to plan a little way to see who is, I don't want to use the word, susceptible.
Who they can trick.
I don't want to say gullible, but it's one of those type of words. But they were saying, we're going to put this out, and they said they're going to put this out, and they're going to make the whole thing flat Earth. They're going to make fake people, fake astronauts, fake everybody, give them IDs, everything. And they're going to say it's all flat, and it's really not. And, of course, we know that. I mean, me and you, we know that. Phyllis knows that. We all know it. Hercules knows. We all know it's not flat.
Right.
But there are people, and even people I knew on my own Facebook friends, that were going sending me information. Mark, what do you think? What do you think? And I say, look, I've been around the Earth three times or more, spinning around in the moon and every some of the planets, and it's round. And they're going, I said, it's not perfectly round, but it's round, you know, from space. And they're going, but this is true. This is not. And I said, this is not true. And I guess I lost some friends because it's weird. I mean, you know, they've been not around the Earth.
Yeah, but that's
and they haven't been on the highest.
That's a very good point.
Altitudes where you see.
A very good point on discernment. You know, it's very difficult when you're being cheated and lied to by people in authority or what you perceive to be authority. It's very difficult for people to discern through something like that, and it's kind of tragic, really, that it's so much of it's going on.
Yeah, and there's another one that's out there, guys. NASA's fake, right? They're saying that. NASA's fake.
Oh, yeah.
Not all. Not all. And like in every in every department, I was going to say dimension. Mm-hmm. In every department, there's a dimension. And those departments will have the fake news part of it, you know, the pushing out that stuff. So we got to look through things because we know a person who's now in his late 80s, but he worked with he worked with NASA back in the 60s. And should I tell that story quickly?
Not really. Yes. No, it's too long.
Okay. Well, it was his mathematical formula that allowed the LEM to land on the moon that he got through telepathy, let's say, or vision. So this is real. And, yes, there's people inside the moon. And
yes, we landed.
No, the moon is not a place that's going to trap your soul and bounce you to Jupiter or some other place and throw you back to Earth. It's not what it is. I've been on the moon. I've been in the moon, and I used to go to the moon when I was before I came to this planet. So it's a base, but there's kind of humanoids there too.
I would be interested in hearing more about that. I'm sharing in the book that I'm writing my experiences in the moon. So I'd love to hear. If not today, your experiences in the moon. In the moon, yes.
You know what? I have a question for Maria. Maria, because you seem to know Tim so very well. How many people did he meet that were like famous people that he got paranormal stories from? Did he ever have like those types of experiences?
Oh, thousands. That literally thousands. He used to tell me stories. This is a funny one. He was telling me because he used to be a publicist and he used to work with the rock band and he was into so many things. He was into filmmaking. He was into acting when he was younger, you know, and you know, through time, we all expand. Mainly, I think, creative people, we get bored and add things on. So he was telling me, I think I told you, Hercules, he was telling me once that he went to this really great party, and the party was the Beatles. So he says the Beatles were hosting the party. They had Ravi Shankar, the sitar player, and he was saying it was a really great party. It was in the city. And I said to him, and I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but he told everybody, and honestly, he passed away. He's not going to yell at me. and I cannot get him in trouble legally. So he said to me, he says, look, he says, I don't know how the party was. He says, when you walked in, it had a lot of the famous bands at the time, which you'll see why I'm not mentioning the names, but pretty much everybody famous. And I said to him, I said, how was the party? He goes, how should I know? I walked in, everybody was high. I'm lucky I remember walking in the door.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, you know, so he knew a lot of people. But, you know, he looked at it as, oh, it's one more person. He wasn't impressed by people. He was impressed by people that had heart or knowledge or, you know, or that cared about people. Like I said, he was very, like you were saying, you know, Phyllis, that he really had such a big heart. He cared about everybody. He helped everybody. I'm telling you, if he had $2 and somebody needed three, he would find a way to get the three to them. And he was really very unbelievably good like that. And he never told anybody. If I wasn't seeing it on and off, I wouldn't have known. He didn't brag. He didn't mention, oh, this is what I did for somebody, you know. And he did things like that all the time.
That's not surprising. That's not surprising.
Yeah.
I know personally that Tim encouraged me because before I connected with Tim, initially was to review things and to interview him on the show and so forth, and that was during his movie phase, you know, where he was making movies. But up until I connected with Tim, my writings were either self-published, they were in magazines, or like on Kindle, with him, I actually got published in anthologies, in books. So after 16 of them, I felt... you know, ready to tackle it on my own. So he played a very significant role in my life in that way. And also in terms of some of my weirder stuff, I guess we'll call it that, he played a big role with the books he was publishing. So some of my writings that were a bit more obscure, you know, wound up in the books. You know, so I know with me and in terms of my own brand of cosmic spirituality, Tim was instrumental in bringing that to the surface. And I met both of you, or all three of you, through Tim. So I'm forever grateful for that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
wild. That's wild.
I got to meet all of you.
Yeah. And, like,
I really feel he really helped everybody in some way. I think he touched everybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would come upstate to visit with me, and Harold would come up. They could drive up. I don't remember. One time Carol Ann came, but he had come up alone sometimes with him and to Harold on the train. Did he come up on a train? Phil's
came up on
the
train. Yeah, he took the train a lot.
He did. And one time I think he rented a car, or he had a car, or Harold had a car. So we had a car. And they drove up, met me at the field. I met him at Thornton Falls area, and I drove him up. And, you know, he'd go out to a little diner or something. And he was so... He's a really fun guy. He was really fun, and I just miss him. And I wish we didn't live so far from each other, because we would invite him up a lot of times to come up. And he came up for parties or like Christmas. He'd come up, but as he was getting more sicker, not feeling good, he told me, "I can't. No, I don't have the energy. Or maybe another time." And I'd say, "Phyllis, I'll come down to you. You know, we're here. We'll come down."
Right.
And he'd say, "Maybe next week." You know, and he would say that, and then he would be not feeling good, so it would never happen for a long time.
You know what?
And we had a good time.
But you want to know
at that pub?
We did. But you know what's ironic? The last time we actually ever saw Tim was at the Pine Bush UFO event.
Yes, it is truly physically the last time.
We physically saw him.
Pine Bush.
Is that the one in
UFO
Jersey?
Event, and his sister took his niece took a picture of me and Tim and my alien T-shirt I bought, and then she went and bought one for herself, Doria.
But that was really apropos.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
He was still not feeling good. Caroline was there.
He couldn't stay for the long haul. He had to leave early.
Yeah, he was telling me I got to go, and he was fun. He was really fun. And anybody, I wish I knew you guys, or if you and Maria, Tim and Maria had known, I'm a ghost hunter type, but I used to do that a long time ago, and I used to help trap souls, you know, trapped in one that committed suicide, and helped her get home to the other side.
You know,
I
got a question for Maria.
I love it.
Did you
love
go out of body to see Tim yet?
No. I checked in on him a little bit, and it just felt to me, and everybody picks up things differently. You know, just like in the physical body, we connect differently to different friends, different people, you know. So I felt that he was fine. I didn't feel anything that he needed help with, like, you know, transition, that type of thing.
No,
but
he went back.
He was good.
But he
was, transitioned
yeah,
back.
He just felt to me like he went away. Like, you know, he didn't, when I tuned into him, it felt like he really didn't want to be in touch with anybody at that time. You know, so whatever he was doing, because, you know, he was always busy. So whatever he was doing, you know, it wasn't unfriendly. It was just like, I'm doing something. You know, so
Maria, was it,
past that.
Was it soon after he passed over that you got that vibe from
next
him?
Next day. Not the
next
same
day?
Day. The next day. Because I was just trying to check. But,
yeah.
I think he was probably calmed down. Mark didn't try to speak to him until maybe
I always give,
4 days or so later.
I give
so
people
later.
3 to 4 days, and I'll tune in. I give them time to acclimate
nice.
The side, the other side, see their mom and dad who's over there.
You might, Maria, if you haven't listened to it, I found it just absolutely riveting, because this isn't something we normally do. But I said, Mark, I said, can you get in touch with Tim? I want to know how he's doing. But that was maybe on the 3rd, June 3rd. He died on the 31st of May.
31st.
And so on
right.
June, I
yeah,
said,
yeah.
On June 3rd, I said to Mark, I said, could you go see if you can get Tim? And so he remote viewed with Tim, and he says, I got him. I said, okay. And so I started, I recorded the conversation between Mark and Tim. So Mark would, you know,
I was mimicking Tim.
Mark was mimicking what Tim was saying and how he was saying it, and I took that transmission and I made a
YouTube.
I asked Tim for permission. I said, "Do I have permission to make a video out of this and you know put it out there?" He said, "Sure." So I did, and it's on Mark's YouTube site. So if you're curious and you want to see how he was doing 3 days later, it's absolutely riveting.
And then I went out of body a week later after that with him, and Phyllis was with me, but she doesn't always recall all the things we're out there.
I hardly ever recall, but that's.
But when she does, we're on a spaceship, so that's good. So we join. You know, we have. Out of bodies that we remember
together. I find I never remember what I say when I do a reading because I've been doing this, like I said, full time since I'm 16. So I don't remember anything I say to anybody when I'm doing a reading. I do remember if I'm helping them with the cult, you know, or with, you know, or I teach classes on everything except astrology. And astrology is a wonderful field. Honestly, it's just too slow for me. I don't have that kind of patience. I would like to say I do, but I don't. Yeah.
Well, it's sort of mathematical, too. I mean, it's really more of a, it's kind of a science rather than, but still, we're not that interested in astrology, actually.
Yeah.
But
it's too slow.
But Mark had an out-of-body with him maybe a week or so later, and he was already had his big palatial apartment set up on the other side. Was his mother there?
I love that.
Yes.
Yeah, and in that one, his mother was
there. His mother was there.
But he's really been going. We haven't tried to contact him again, you know, because we don't really try to contact people on the other side. But I would be curious to know how much, you know, because he was working, he had made an effort to get to the Ashtar Command, and he did.
Yeah.
And he was working on it.
They met with him that week.
Yeah.
That's what I was, when I was there, he was getting all excited. And, we appeared, when Phyllis and I appeared out of body. We were over there appearing in a sidewalk, like New York area, we came in. And I said to Phyllis as we're walking with Tim, he's on my left, and Phil's on my right. And I said, Phyllis, this looks like a future in New York right now. And I figure we're in the city, still in the city with the frequency of New York, but we're in the future zone, actually, a little bit future. So it looks cleaned up, very cleaned up on the other side. And in the heaven realm, it's always nice and clean. It's not like seedy.
Right?
If it's seedy, you're not in the heaven realm, guys.
Yeah, you're in the
realm. If someone's throwing daggers and knives at you or spears, that's not heaven. That's a lower frequency. Just below the frequency, which you want to get to. But they still play and attack, you know, those guys. But on the heaven realm. So we go into this beautiful place, and he's got a beautiful wraparound porch. It's at a high part, but it didn't feel like the top of a building, but it was, like, very high up, like 15 floors or more. And he had a big wraparound porch, beautiful, not like you think of Earth. You say it's hard to describe these buildings. But
colors.
Incredible
a lot of the colors we don't
room.
Have.
Yeah, it was open. Mm-hmm. The whole thing's open.
Oh. See,
you know, guys, everybody listening,
like
you wonder if there's a bathroom on the other side. Do you ever think of that, guys? Anybody listening on the people have asked
now
me that.
Now they will. Now the people will think
they Mark, do they, do
now,
they eat?
I've
do
never
they do things on the other side?
It's funny. It's really funny because I've never run across anywhere that has that.
I know. But I made a specific point to start noticing because I was doing that too, and then I was saying, wait a minute, I'm in these houses or these apartments and these places.
Mm-hmm.
What? You know, so I started meandering around Tim's apartment.
I found your YouTube video, by the way. I'll add it in the description of today's
My phone
show.
Disconnected itself.
Oh,
phone
okay.
Unplugged itself. So I meandered around the apartment while he was making – you can have drinks over there. You can drink orange juice. You can do things like that because it's thought form. But
oh,
you still taste everything. It's not real food. And I tell people it dissipates once you swallow. It dissipates in your frequency field. So it's no food. There's no digestion. But the thing is, when you get over there for the first time and you're new, you still have the same habits and feelings the same way when you're still physical here on the earth. So there are bathrooms set up because they know the innocent souls coming over for the first time, they're just getting here for about a month or so, are going to still have their bodies operating similar to what they know and remember, even though there's nothing there. So they will feel they have to go into a bathroom. It is so bizarre. So I went to check out things, and I've been noticing this. And so I talked to angels, I talked to different people. And anybody who's been there for a long, long time knows this already. But if you're just new, they don't know. So there's faucets and water. Listen to me, faucets. I never talk like that. There's faucets and showers and pools and everything we're used to here in the physical realm. It's just so refined and so beautiful. But there are bathrooms, guys. And because a soul sometimes says, what the heck, I'm over here. So they're drinking these drinks. Or they're eating food and they think they have to go to the bathroom. It's just their thought. It's them. Once they get it, once they learn it, they know. And then guess what? The apartment loses the bathroom effect, keeps the pools and the things that people like, showers and things like that. Yeah, it keeps all that.
Funny.
But the idea of the bathroom disappears.
That is funny, Mark.
And is bizarre. And you asked about this on the etheric realms, guys. Anyone listening on our podcast are going to wonder about that on ships. They exist the same way. They exist the same way. So if someone's taken out of body or physically taken, there's going to be bathrooms on spaceships for people if they're physically taken. They know this.
Right.
They work with humans. They understand. They were people. They understand. They are people. So they understand. But on the higher dimensional spaces of the etheric, that's not happening. It's any food a person would eat dissipates. And it's usually a thought form creation.
And
it's
that's
amazing.
Something that a lot of people
it's really
know
a very strong frequency
that,
level.
That these ships and a lot of the astral and etheric constructs are thought projections. So they're very modifiable. And you are very active in creating them, even though it doesn't seem so at the time. We experience that every night in dreams. You know, in dreams we create 3D scenarios, and our mind constructs all these places we can visit and people we can meet. And so we keep that after death. And
that's right.
If you find yourself in the not-so-nice place, maybe you're having not-so-nice thoughts.
exactly where your thoughts
are.
Good point.
I was in one of the apartments I was in years and years and years ago. I moved in, and there's two spirits in the basement. The first thing my son said was, really, it has to be you, right? You couldn't find a different place. Nobody's in the basement. So, but one of them, there was this heavyset lady, and, you know, she really didn't know she passed. You know, so then you help them pass. And then there was a gentleman where he wasn't going anywhere. You know, not an issue, not negative, but he was scared of going because he thought he was going to hell. So he wasn't going to go anywhere for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
That's
because
their fear.
They have to work all that out. And he had a lot of fear. And even though he knew he passed, you know, he was aware, he wasn't going anywhere. I tried everything. He's like, no, I'm fine. He told me why he didn't want to go anywhere. Because he was sure he was going to hell. And, you know, you really do create, in the beginning when you pass, you create whatever your belief system is.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. So if he wasn't going to get over that, that's where he was going. So he was going nowhere for a while. He's probably still in the same basement.
Well, he put himself in limbo.
And time is not the same for them. If 50 years go by, and they'll feel like 10 years went by or something like that. Because when I worked with a soul that was hung herself, she was 16 when she did it. She still looked 16 when I saw her. And she didn't know directly how many years had gone by, even though she knew the girl that lived in the house that was a friend, like a semi-friend for me, but I knew this girl in chorus, but my friend knew her and invited me over to see the ghost, talk to the ghost, help the ghost, whatever.
Right.
And so the girl knew her when she was a little girl, like 5 years old. But now she's a teenager getting ready to go to college, right? And she was worrying about Christina, her name was, and she says, I'm worrying about her because when I leave for college, no one's here. She was an only child and raised by her mom. And so it was a little mansion. It was a mini mansion. It was cute. It had a horse barn in the back. But this was a cool house. You know, it was really 1800s or 1700s. And Christina would materialize, come down stairs. People would see her. Or she would come, a party was happening, and they had a parlor. And a door, two double doors with a parlor, and we closed, and they were going to sit there and talk, and whatever, this was her story, tell me. And Christina walked through the doors. People saw this girl walk through the doors, come through physical looking, sit at the piano, start playing the piano, and then dematerialize. That's how the soul was. And she was a gentle person. So I know they don't know how long they're there. They just are in that state. For them, it might feel like a year or 5 years. And they just watch the person age, their friend, you know, whoever they're talking
to. It's funny. It's like, really, it's like you can't make this stuff up. Really.
No.
No.
You know, because it's just so amazing when you think about everything going on. Yeah, and I find... And I find a lot of times, because the vibration of the planet is, you know, 100,000 vibrations per second, and ours is about between 70, 80, something around there, unless you're doing healing. Then while you're doing healing, you match the planet, you know, just for that short time, you know. So when you think of all the frequencies and the energy and the vibration, everything else that goes into, you know, life and the planet and past the planets and everywhere, because everything is energy, you know. When talks about a UFO or different beings from a different planet, I don't see how anybody could possibly think there aren't any. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, because
we know,
you know,
exactly
the cosmic levels in the universe and the galaxy, it's so tremendous. How can we be the only ones? So I'm thinking it has to be a little ego.
Well, you know, I just want to say something about that.
I come from another galaxy.
You know, that was engineered into the narrative for the planet by the people that didn't want anyone to know that we were already working with extraterrestrials and all of that.
Right.
So that's just been lies that have been perpetrated by the powers that be, you know, as long as there's been media to lie.
And
it's just been one big lie. Like,
guys, it's we have 10 more minutes left, and I'd like for you guys to share your contact information, and then we'll talk for the rest of the time. So, Maria, how can people get in contact?
Who?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
How can people get in contact with you, Maria?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, my email address is my first initial last name, so it's mdandrea100@gmail.com. And my site is just mariadeandrea.com because my web guy didn't want me to forget it. You know, not computer literate here, right? And then my phone number, my cell number is 631-559-1248. So people can call me, text me. I always answer. Might take a day, but I always get back to everybody. Oh, and I also have one that says ministry.
Are you there, Maria? Mark, Phyllis? Hello?